Been a while, hasn't it? Oh, I wouldn't be here if I had a choice, but I have to do these sort of things now. Makes me seem more human.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 61 for the week of March 9th, 2015. I am Forgetful Judge David T. Cole, and I'm here with...
Bloated Entitlement Program Sarah G. Bunting. Fuck you, pay me.
And...
Rib Enthusiast Tara Ariano.
And also we got...
Syringe Full of Bourbon Alec Vidal.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for your patience as we had to take a week off due to... cross-country, cross-ocean illness from three of the four people that you will be hearing in this podcast today.
That's bullshit.
Well, so first things first, the phrase that doesn't pay, which was lying liar who lies, was guessed almost right away.
One and done, right?
Yep. So there is a new one in play today. Now that that is out of the way, welcome Alec Vidal.
Hi.
Welcome.
Yay.
We have Alex joining us here today because... among many other shows that he covers for us, including what are you working on now? Nip Tuck, Real Housewives
like 12
of Beverly,
Real Housewives.
Yep, all the Real Housewiveses have covered American Horror Story in the past, many others, and now we'll be covering House of Cards for us, which is our lead topic today. And before we get into it, we're all adults. We all know Netflix gonna Netflix. Let's assume that everything that follows is possibly going to be from the entire. Third season of the show, which all dropped over a week ago. So if you haven't had a chance to get all the way through it, caveat emptor, I guess.
Tough but fair.
I feel it is. Have we, Dave and I watched all of it. Sarah, I think you did too. Alex, did you?
I did. That was actually the one benefit of all of us getting sick.
Yeah. Right.
If we had recorded it last week, I would have had like half done, but then I finished it up.
Yes. The
show is like Thin Mints to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's not good for you. You always feel kind of sick at the end of it. There's probably, like, melted crayons in it.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember each one after I have it.
No, yeah, not at all.
Exactly.
I mean, there was so much stuff in this season where they were like, someone knows about Claire's abortion. I was like, I don't even remember what happened. Like, I seriously don't remember anything about that except that she lied about something. But, like, so what? They lie about everything.
Well,
I do like that. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I do like that they, because it's kind of a show that you can all watch in one sitting, and before I started watching the third season, I still had like 6 or 7 episodes to catch up on the second season, so maybe I'm coming from it from a different point of view, mm-hmm. but they're able to bring back small, like, not that the abortion thing was a small plot point last season, but yeah. They can kind of bring something like that out of the blue, and then I'm able to remember it like immediately after it happened. And I kind of don't mind that about House of Cards. And I think a lot of other shows wouldn't be able to pull that off as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of shows don't pull it off as well, but I mean, yeah, you're right. The format and the content really kind of work hand in hand. It must be a very different experience to come from writing a normal kind of show to writing something like this, where it's like, well, we just have to assume everyone's watching it all in order. Cause they kind of don't have a choice unless they bail. Really. It's not like episodic TV where like people might dip in and out, even if it's very serialized. So what did we think of this season?
Well, okay. So I never really felt sick watching this show. I kind of reveled in its bonker TV-ness, as mm-hmm. Tara would say. But this season, it just was like, this could have been any show this season. Like the craziness is gone. There are some outrageous moments, I suppose, like the season opens with him peeing on his dad's gravestone, but it never really gets crazier than that. And
well, I mean, the most outrageous thing that, like, I was going through like the big outrageous moments mm-hmm. from each season, and the first one, even though it happens in the first episode of the second season, I consider him pushing Zoe Barnes in front of the train as like the big one from the first season.
Yep.
And then the second season, it's the Meacham thing, which we should all forget about. And then this season, it was just them having sex, which maybe it's just because I just wrote the particle for the second episode. Mm-hmm. And it's fresh in my mind. But that was the most disturbing thing.
Yeah, it's
upsetting.
It was the
most disturbing thing from that season. Yeah, it was hard to watch.
Yeah.
Well, and once again, also, Spacey apparently, he has a couple of things in his contract. A, there has to be some scene where he's singing at some length. And B, that I lost my train of thought between A and B. I guess
something that makes him look hetero is what I was going to guess you were going to say.
Yes,
next.
Thank you.
You're
that
welcome.
He's like stroking that guy's face, who I liked that character, but it was like he was in a different show sometimes. But like they're having this vibe, and then it's like whatever's going to happen, it's not going to happen on camera because Spacey won't allow it. Like, mm-hmm. Dude, if you'll allow that hairpiece. But you won't French a bro on camera. Why not? Like, what is really worse and less believable?
Excuse me. Yeah. Someone, I think Tyler Coates tweeted last week that there are more bisexual men on House of Cards than he's ever met in his life, which I think is true of me as well. It does seem like anything goes with anybody. How did we feel
and
about
yet,
go ahead.
Nope, go ahead.
How do we feel about the characters that came back and the other presidential contenders that are facing off against Frank, who obviously was never going to not run?
Well, I think Doug Stamper was wasted this season. I mean, he got such a great character, and he's basically just spinning his wheels in recovery and feeling sorry for himself.
And it seems like they were going to really focus on that character, especially given the first episode where it's like 30 uninterrupted minutes of just Doug, and I was like, this is
great. It was the best.
I enjoy that actor, and I like watching him, and I was kind of excited for him to get to do something more than just brooding near Kevin Spacey and watching Rachel have sex from a window. But it did go on forever, it felt like. He was just kind of like, we're checking in with Doug for a scene in this episode, and he's still drinking. He's still sad.
Well, that's the thing. Is they did focus on him, but they focused on like two things, you know, like it was his long, you know, recovery asterisk and, you know, this long play he was having with what's her face?
Heather Dunbar.
Thank you. But this brings into my theory, which is season three of House of Cards is really just half a season's worth of material stretched out for a full 13 episodes. Yeah. Because the other two seasons of House of Cards, and I think we've been conditioned, at least I have, to expect this, which is some sort of goal-oriented ending for a season. You know, first season, you know, he gets his seat, and second season he's the vice president to president. And this one just seemed like maybe this was the half mark of the third arc, and then they stretched it out, which would explain Doug Stamper's incredibly long recovery and just how everything was on a slow burn, including the Russian storyline and everything. It was just like, it felt like I was watching Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
And what a waste of a Mickelson.
Really?
That poor
seriously.
Man. Like, he would have this dialogue that you're like, you would listen to it. And then people who are just like going through the room, for example, my husband, and catching snippets of the dialogue were like, seriously? Yeah. He like made me pause and he was like, does he think just because that's Hannibal's brother that we're going to buy that? I was like, I think that's why I didn't notice that it was terrible until he pointed it out.
Yeah.
Also, I was so happy that Doug was alive that I didn't notice anything bad for seriously 3.5 episodes.
Me too. Yeah, I love Doug. But yeah, Amwork's passing is not the big story that the people that write the show seem to think it was.
Well, and also like that is a positive goal. I mean, that is, you know what I mean, like,
well,
but I mean, like, there was nothing
compared to all the people he had murdered in other seasons.
I know, but what I'm
sure.
saying is, like, there was no real true untowardsness done in support of that goal, such as in season one and season two, right. I mean, that's the hook of House of Cards is, you know, here's this power play running up the ladder and all the terrible things people will do to get there. And like season three didn't really have much of that. I mean, it just had politics as usual stuff.
Right.
And it didn't have that crazy bonkers TV layer on top of it, which House of Cards, this is like the only reason I watch.
Yeah. I wonder if it's that like there's been such a bonkers arms race that like people who are working on the show are like, well, we can't compete with Scandal, you know, in terms of like complete campy stupidity. And like now there's so many other shows that match or exceed the craziness that has happened on House of Cards that like, well, you know, just showing us boobs sometimes isn't going to make enough. It's not going to be enough of a difference maker, I don't feel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know where they go from here, really. But I, but no,
well,
I have
how
to
did
keep
we
watching.
Feel about how do we feel about the state of the Underwood marriage?
I mean, that was the most interesting part of the season for me. I just like when it was bouncing between the Amwork stuff and him running for president, I couldn't really care. I mean, I could really, I couldn't really care less about that. And yeah. Watching him, I enjoyed all of the manipulating that they had to do in the earlier seasons and watching how they did that together. And now that they're president and first lady, they can't do stuff like that out in the open. Not that they were doing it out in the open, but they couldn't get away with as much stuff. So focusing on the relationship at a time when they can't equally be manipulative bastards and the toll that took on Claire was so enjoyable to watch. And I don't know. I love watching Robin Wright in every scene. She's just like her face acting is so subtle. And so I could just watch her wear her whatever crazy first lady outfits and act cold and then cry over a pan of eggs all day.
Yeah, she's great. She's so much better than him. It's like not even really close, which is why when we get to the end and she's like, I don't love you anymore. I sort of was like, when was this ever about love? Like, to me, it always seems like...
Yeah, that's why I didn't buy it.
Yeah.
Totally.
Like, when she has her confrontation scene where she's like, you know, fuck me, be rough and stuff, and then he can't look in her face. Like, since when has this ever been a thing? Like, we've seen you have sex with each other literally one time, and that did not look that great either, by the way. So I don't understand why suddenly this is the thing that makes her decide she is done. Like... I feel like,
yeah, wasn't there always some Clintonian arrangement? I just assumed.
I did too. So that's, it's weird.
Yeah, that the ambassadorship doesn't work out and probably shouldn't. And that could have gone any number of interesting ways.
Yeah.
But instead she's like, I've, you know, all along I've been the, you know, woman behind the man. And it's like,
Yeah.
Like I get that being the first lady is boring and you're like frustrated that this didn't work out, never mind all the people that were killed because you're both sociopaths and you don't really care.
Yes.
I just assumed like once he was done with his being president part that he was going to arrange for her to be president and kill a bunch of people doing that and that would be season four.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. So I mean, I also don't think that they stay separated, but you know, I guess we'll have to wait a year for that to pay off or not. Meanwhile, poor Meacham, having to be around them all the time, knowing their secret.
I still don't quite get Meacham, and I'm fascinated by him. He's just like, every time he's in a scene alone with one of the two of them, I'm just like, they're going to have sex, aren't they? Just like, it's going to come out of nowhere. And then instead, he's just kind of like hanging around them all the time and threatening the writer was a character for him.
He was so against really the writer guy that I expected that was percolating to some kind of hate sex situation too.
Yeah. Why not? Like, we've already had a threesome between Meacham and Claire and Frank. Like, it seemed like, well, now we're going to have a threesome between Frank, Meacham, and writer guy.
Yeah.
And that was the only possible escalation. That's really all I wanted to see in this season.
Yeah. Well, we were all let down. Any final thoughts? You're going to be continuing to cover it on a weekly basis on the site, so people should check out your articles. But any final thoughts?
I was just going
to quickly say that I think a very daring take on House of Cards would be to switch the focus to Dunbar, and then like make her like this, you know, as she rises and beats him. All the terrible things she has to do and everything from like a woman's perspective that she has to do would be interesting.
Well, it did. I mean,
I love that actress too.
She's
so
amazing.
I'm all for that.
She was in charge of 30 Rock Fight Club.
She sure was. Yeah. And it seemed like that's where you're right, Dave, that's where it was heading already. Yeah. Where by the end of the season, all the stuff that she originally said she wasn't going to do, she was like, totally. So, you know, why not?
Yeah. But to follow her victory would be interesting.
Yes.
Sorry, Alex. Yeah.
Alex, go ahead.
Oh, I loved every scene with her and Jackie, who's also, I like that actress a lot too. And they didn't have a ton of scenes together, but it was such a sigh of relief whenever they were together, as opposed to when Jackie was stuck with Remy and all of their scenes, which were just so repetitive. And I felt like every time they were together, it was like, we're not here to talk about a relationship. We're here to talk about business. And then they'll talk business for 30 seconds. And it's like, now let's look at each other sadly.
Yeah. No one made you worry that, oh, wait, someone did. Yeah, I agree. I think the debate scene among the three of them was probably the most electrifying sequence of the show all season that Claire was not really in, personally. Mm.
All right. Well, keep checking the site for Alex's particles, right?
Every Monday. Yep.
Dear Mr. President, there are too many states nowadays. Please eliminate three. I am not a crackpot.
I am not a crackpot, but I think TV kids really need to quit storming away from the dinner table with quite as much frequency.
I will.
I'm gonna. Secrets and Lies is far from the only offender, and this is far from Secrets and Lies' only offense against good TV, but you're just the latest hotspot in a decades-long epidemic of TV teens stomping off mid-entree. Half the adolescents on TV should have starved to death by now. Although in my house growing up, they'd have been kicked to death before they had a chance to waste away for pulling that foolishness. And even if my mother had been trying to let that shit happen under her roof, you'd best believe me and Dave B would have been expected to storm back downstairs and do the dishes. Not negotiable. Mm-hmm. TV parents, strict and up in general, but especially on this point, I am not a crackpot.
Corollary to your not a crackpot, the shitty kids on The Americans this week were invited to a grown-ups dinner party for no good reason so that they could be judgy about people's est, which, not that they're not wrong to be judgy about people being an est, it is est, but at the same time, like, let the kids eat leftover pizza in their room. There's no reason for them to be there when Stan's trying to get a leg over Callie Thorne. I'm not a crackpot either.
No, you're not.
Hi, Liv.
Hello, Dave. Cool.
Hi. So, season 8, episode 8 of Face Off. What did you think? Was it fun?
Yeah, it was really fun, but also sort of creepy.
Yeah. So, explain why it was creepy. What was the challenge this week?
It was a horror challenge. Uh-huh. You have to create a makeup using fantastic costumes. You have to make it creepy, but also use the beauty makeup into it.
Yeah, they said it had to be avant-garde. Do you know what that means?
No.
Oh, it just means something that's new and people haven't really seen before. Something that's sort of original and like super
something
stylish.
Something new and fun.
Yeah, like putting a mop on your head and calling it a hat. So how do you think the people did? I know one person had sort of a creative block, Stephanie. Do you know, remember Stephanie?
Yes, she had a stuck time.
Yeah.
Like all of day one, she was thinking about it. She did a little bit of clay, but not much.
And they don't have all the time in the world. So what would you do if you couldn't think of something to do that you really liked? How would you break that block? How would you like think of something to get your brain going?
I think I would look around and see what else is doing to make sure I'm not doing that.
Right.
And then I would, what I would do is go outside and sort of get some fresh air while reading a book of creepy makeups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or you can think of movies you saw that have weird things in them and like combine things and take the
or
eyes.
Or some weird TV shows.
Yeah. That's
or something odd.
What did you think of the Logan's disease arm?
It looked like it had a disease. It looked creepy and weird, and I've never seen anything like
that. Oh, yeah? Have you ever had an allergy test?
No.
Has your mom had an allergy test? They had to put little pins in her arms.
Pins in your arms? Okay.
Okay, so your mom's had a disease arm, just like Logan's guy, too. She looked exactly like that once upon a time. Not that bad.
Did you?
I don't know. I can't hear what Dave Wilson
said. Okay, so let's talk about Emily's creature. It was a big blue triangle head. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, and she had strings And then the left side of the strings just came off.
Yeah,
so
like didn't have enough glue.
She went with feathers.
Yeah, what did you think about that? Do you like the feathers or the string better?
I like string better.
It was weird, right?
More weird.
Exactly.
And it looked more like how she wanted the cage on his head.
Yep.
She wanted a cage on the head.
But she didn't have that much time. So instead of trying again with the string and failing and having nothing, at least she had something, right?
Right.
And the judges liked it at the end, so good for her.
At least they liked it.
Yeah. All right.
But I like this.
Oh, excuse you, Liv. Oh, come on, Liv. Stop it. We're trying to record a podcast here. All right. So who made your favorite look this week?
Kelly. She made a girl who wears a mask,
yeah.
But then when she takes it off, it's all creepy and ugly and it just has to be all.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So who was the bottom look? Who lost?
Jamie. And who won was Ben, his second win.
Can you describe Ben's?
Yeah, it was fun.
And what did you think about the spider head lady?
Oh, it was weird and unusual and creepy-like, but she didn't win.
Nope. I don't think her makeup, she had to rush it, and it wasn't that great. Neville said that the spider head looked like a Klingon or Borg. Do you know what those are?
No.
No? Do you know what Star Trek is?
No.
Do you know what Star Wars is?
Yes.
Yeah, Star Trek is like Star Wars, but not as good. And the Klingons and Borg are from the... You remember that.
Yeah.
All right. So I have one more question for you, okay?
Okay.
If you had to make a monster that scares you personally, what kind of things would you put in it? Oh, excuse you, Liv.
That was you.
That was you.
It was you.
Oh, you just farted.
No, you.
Oh, okay. All right. So what kind of monster would scare you? What would you put into it? What kind of things scare you?
Sharks.
Oh, okay. So maybe we'd be some sort of shark guy. And then how, if you had a shark monster, how would you make it beautiful and avant-garde? What would you add to it?
I would add pretty purples and blues and silvers and also put a shark doing ballet, something like that.
Well, sharks do ballet in the ocean.
They do?
Yep. You have to go like pretty deep, but it's where they have their ballets and pretty, it's like in the Mariana Trench. All right, Liv, thanks for talking with us.
You're welcome.
Not impressed.
Bring back Mom next week, says Liv.
All right, everybody. It's time to go around the dial. Our first stop is with Tara.
I wanted to say that Togetherness has wrapped its first season as of last night as we record this. It's the show that we've mentioned a couple of times over the course of the year, I think, since it started, from Mark and Jay Duplass. Mark Duplass also stars in it, along with Melanie Lynskey and Amanda Peet, and newcomer, at least as far as I'm concerned, Steve Zissies. And I wrote about this in my season in review, but what I really appreciate about the show and what it does so well is to dramatize how devastating just like tiny moments, a look, one harsh word, one disappointed expectation can do, how it can affect people and ruin lives, really. And so the season finale was kind of about all of those little tiny moments building up to huge explosive events. And it's great. If you haven't watched it, it's all on HBO Go now. There's only 8 episodes and they're only a half an hour, and you should check it out. I really recommend it.
All right, it's Alex Stern.
Okay, so last Friday, Netflix released Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which I have alternatively been calling Unshakable Kimmy Schmidt, Incomparable Kimmy Schmidt. I can never quite remember what it is. But it's from Robert Carlock and Tina Fey from 30 Rock. And I was a little skeptical about the show when I first saw the trailer. The trailer didn't quite land for me. There were a lot of jokes that I just thought it fell completely flat, and I thought it might cross into saccharine a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I started watching it, and it's just, I love it so much. I watched, of the 13 episodes, I think I've seen like 8 or 9. I just kind of like watched them in one sitting, and I'm blanking on her name now.
Ellie Kemper.
I loved her so much in The Office. I liked her as an actress more than the character. And she just gets to do so much fun stuff on this show. And like the physical humor that she does, I did not realize she was capable of. I guess I should describe the plot of the show real quickly. It's Kimmy Schmidt was in a religious cult, and she was trapped in a bunker for 15 years by her crazy preacher, who sounds kind of like the crazy preacher that Kenneth followed in 30 Rock. Oh,
yeah. Reverend Gary?
Reverend Gary, but this is like Reverend John Wayne, John Gacy, or something like that.
Richard Wayne, Gary Wayne.
Yes, that's it.
We watched all of the season, so I'm very familiar. Yep.
And it's in my favorite genre of television. I am on record of saying that I love TV shows and movies about people coming to the present time and being confused by cars. Yeah. And this is kind of all of that. She gets to make a lot of fun references. She's living with Titus. The character's name is Titus Andromedus. It's also the actor's name is Titus. Sorry, I don't have the information.
Titus Burgess, I think.
Titus Burgess. And he's like, you would know him as a DeFuan from the Queen of Jordan episodes of 30 Rock.
Yep.
And he is like, I would say his episodes on 30 Rock are some of the funniest stuff I've ever seen. And it's like, he gets to do so much fun stuff on this show, too. He has so many shades of his personality that, like, I love his relationship with Kimmy, and they're, like, how he is kind of her mentor only because she is the only person who he could be a mentor towards because she's been living in a bunker for 15 years. Yeah. Otherwise, he has no valuable life advice, is kind of this failed actor living in New York. It's just kind of, like, chock full of gags. I laugh like 10 or 12 times an episode out loud by myself in my apartment. if you liked 30 Rock and you liked, I'd say Community too a little bit. If you, those shows are up your alley, check out this show. It's fantastic.
I would say the season starts off a little like it progresses. It really gets this 30 Rock on the more you watch it.
Well, I think that's true of all sitcoms. It usually takes like 2/3 of a season before it kind of locks into what it's going to be. And this is the same thing. It just,
but you, once you get to the, once you get to Daddy Boy, the musical,
oh man,
you're really locked into the 30 Rock thing. And it's obviously Tina Fey, but the music, I gotta bet, is by the same.
It's by her husband. Right? Yeah. He's a producer on the show. Yeah, there's nothing that gets set up early in the season that doesn't get paid off by the end. Yeah, that's all I'll say. It's very well crafted.
There is a tremendous amount, as I said on Twitter, there's a tremendous amount of world building going on for a comedy, 13 episode comedy. Like it really, it almost has like a kind of a Breaking Bad kind of progression to it, or like building of it, right? You know, like character after character comes in, they play backwards on each other. Like there's only a couple characters that come and go, like her first boyfriend at the house and stuff like that. But I was really impressed. This is a clip from later on in the season, speaking of Breaking Bad. So if you're not there yet, might want to skip ahead about a minute. But Titus needs to get more straight roles. This is his concern. So he hires an acting coach played by Dean Norris, right?
Yep.
Who was Hank Schrader on Breaking Bad, to come and teach him how to act straight. And this is just one clip from
it. His code name on the show is Lalou.
Yeah. But this is pretty good.
Scenario. You're thirsty. Go. Straight men don't drink through straws. It looks like you're a leprechaun.
Which also brings up an interesting point, which is, what is the math? You're right there.
Yeah.
What is the math on Netflix bleeping? You know, do they say like, okay, this is sort of a network show equivalent, so we'll bleep it out? Is a bleeping part of the writing comedy? You know, like, and it was interesting, you know, because we're also watching for later RuPaul on iTunes. And
nothing
is bleeped. So it's always just an interesting math to wonder about when they do this stuff. But yeah, it's a great show.
Yeah.
Highly recommended. If you're into all the shows that Alex said, it's a winner for sure.
And it's already been picked up for a second season. So my secret hope is that somehow Kenneth Parcells can cross over, because Kenneth and Kimmy have a lot in common as characters, I think.
Sarah.
I would like to remind everyone of the existence of In Search Of, which was actually my first exposure to Leonard Nimoy as a child. I thought that was like his main job, which I guess at that point it was. And then I ran across the Star Trek animated series one rainy afternoon and was like, oh, it's the In Search Of guy. Like, my understanding of who did what on Star Trek was sort of in reverse order. Anyway, In Search Of was like the Time Life Mysteries books, but on TV. And it covered everything from Amelia Earhart to Bigfoot. And Nimoy had a way of making everything sound like super credible and interesting. And like, this was, you know, a history class and not bullshit at all. Like, the episode about Nostradamus straight up blew my 8-year-old mind. And on commercials, I was like running into the kitchen to tell my mom like all the stuff that he predicted. And she's like, whatever, I'm trying to smoke menthol, cook dinner, fuck off. Fair enough. Also, don't storm away from the table. Barb.
I was waiting for that.
But yeah, Nimoy's great gift, I think, generally was not ever condescending to his material or cheating it, even though a lot of it was
nonsense.
Not an A+ writing-wise. And I'm really going to miss that guy.
Yeah, In Search of Bigfoot is kind of a legendary episode, and I remember watching that as a kid and just sort of the same thing. It's like, well, I guess I have to go find my Bigfoot baseball searching hat and trek off into the forest because I'm going to bag that bugger. It was sort of like, it was just like one of those.
Even though they're like, whatever, proof, it looked like a color form had been stuck on the lens of the camera, but Nimoy fucking sold it, man.
Agreed.
Now that's like a whole subgenre of like multiple dozens of shows too.
So. Oh yeah, now there's like competing tiers of Bigfoot shows. Now there's like genres within
Bigfoot.
No,
I don't mean just that, like the whole, you know, Ancient Aliens franchise.
Oh, I know, but I'm saying like it's you know, split so many times that we actually have like serious Bigfoot shows and like hoax
competition
discovery
Bigfoot shows hosted by dudes who played Superman.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know who loves all the genres? My spouse.
We'll have to get him on. All right. I have two things. One is Flo from Progressive. I'm really confused about this new commercial where she's going through time.
She travels through time.
She's got her little price gun and she's in front of Genghis Khan and she's explaining things to him. And then he orders her death. And then she goes back to...
she's in Elizabethan times.
That's right. Yeah, she's in front of Elizabeth I. And she's murdered. And then she's
witch
in the
hunts.
Yes, Salem witch
she's
hunts.
Helping you.
And
Deadful Judge.
I just couldn't remember the middle one. And so my question is this. Is Flo an immortal Highlander type? Or are there time-traveling clones of Flo? And second question...
She's Doctor Who.
Second question is, why is she trying to sell pre-industrial society and car insurance with her little price gun?
There's also bone insurance that you can get from Progressive.
Bone insurance?
Boat insurance. They had boats back then.
All right, second up, CSI Cyber. What a colossal shit show this is. Amazing, amazing. It's so terrible. Many, many crimes, but I just want to highlight two. One is in within the first 5 minutes of the show, Dawson from Dawson's Creek is called into the CSI Cyber office or whatever, and he's busy at an arcade playing a shooting game like Lethal Enforcers or whatever. Time Crisis or something like that, and he pauses
what's
the
his
game
name again
he
Nehemiah
pauses
Bongo?
The arcade game.
Yeah, what is his name in the show, do you remember?
No, I don't. It's Dawson. He's at an arcade and he pauses
Agent
the game.
Dawson.
All right.
No, you can't pause a game in an arcade. Even I know that. That was one of the last things I remember before I fell asleep.
And then the second thing is this clip, which I think the Calvinists out there will love, and this bit of a predeterminism, as Patricia Arquette totally solves Calvinism where some people are out there in the world.
Bring up the map. We know from Vicky's rap sheet she had 2 DUIs. She's a drinker. They're going to look for a bar.
And with 75 in cash in the trunk, the last thing they want to do is get pulled over.
Starting at Harbor Boat Restoration, take out all left-hand turns. No risk for a car accident. They'd want to have to call the police. They're going to stick to surface roads, drive just below the speed limit. Omit all highways.
Sir Jerry just got a lot smaller.
Evolutionary survival skills will instinctively take them to higher ground. Change the view to topography. That will take them down to Shookstown Road. We are looking for a bar near Five Forks.
Let's recap. One, we know these criminals are not going to take any left-hand turns. Nobody takes left-hand turns when they're on the run from the law. And two, where are they going to go? Well, instinctively, because of evolutionary stuff, they're just going to want to go to high ground. So they're looking for a bar up in the mountains, accessible with no right turns. Oh my God, guys, they found it. Phew!
Even in that clip, she sounds so much like she's phoning it in. It's really sad.
It is really
sad. She's an Oscar winner. It's not fair.
Well, we should maybe think about taking that back. All right, everybody. It is time for the canon, and Alex has brought us a submission. Take it away, Alex.
I have brought a submission. As Dave alluded to earlier, I am submitting Season 5, Episode 5 of RuPaul's Drag Race to the canon, the most important show of television of all time.
Agreed.
Thank you. When I was going through episodes of shows that I wanted to submit to the canon, I was considering a Snatch Game episode for Drag Race, but wasn't really considering this one, and I was watching them back, and this episode was just, even though this is not my favorite season, I think top to bottom, it's not one of the best casts. This episode just kind of like hit all of the points that I want for an episode of Drag Race and was so perfect. So the episode starts off with the queens returning to the workroom, the W-E-R-K workroom, after the double elimination of Vivian Panay and Honey Mahogany, because they were both boring and I don't remember them, so they probably were boring. Alyssa and Jay Jolie kind of get into a fight that will unfold throughout the rest of the episode, but there's not a ton of in the very beginning of the episode until we get to the mini challenge, which is one of the better mini challenges I think I've seen for this show. It incorporates everything that you kind of want. It has actual skill involved. They're putting an outfit together based on cuddlers, which are snuggies, but they couldn't get the right to the word snuggie, so they're called cuddlers. And it involves people running to grab stuff, which is always really fun, and snatching stuff out of other people's hands. And it has a gay captain of industry of some type that is not an entertainer who is forced to have banter with RuPaul, which we will hear in this clip.
Hi, everyone. Rue, is that a Klein, Epstein, and Parker suit that you're wearing?
Why, yes, it is. What do you think?
Well, I think in this case, Rue wore it best.
All of them laughing nervously is my favorite part. They're just kind of like, we like this. This is funny. See also the absolute vodka czar, who's been on like three of the different seasons and is always forced to do stuff like that. It's great. Yeah. So all of the outfits are actually really surprisingly good. Coco and Detox in particular have great outfits, with Detox like kind of adding day glow to her zebra print snuggie. Sorry, cuddler. Are we allowed to say snuggie? I'm not even sure. Alaska has a lion's head on top of her leather skin cuddler, which is fantastic. And then Jinx comes out in this boho Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen inspired outfit that Alyssa says is not particularly – Alyssa didn't believe that Jinx did the challenge correctly because she doesn't like the outfit and she thinks that Jinx
snatching.
Was just trying to. Oh.
Sorry, my mistake. Go ahead.
She thinks that Jinx was just trying to be funny and trying to do a character, which is what she always does. And this theme will again unfold throughout the episode of people not quite understanding what Jinx does and not really thinking that being funny is something that a drag queen needs to be, which has been proven incorrect over and over again on the show.
By RuPaul in every episode.
By RuPaul in every episode. In this episode, it's like everyone has to prove, not really to America that they're the best drag queen, but to RuPaul, and right. Not even to the other judges, which is kind of what I love about this show. Like, Michelle Visage can say whatever she does, but RuPaul's not going to – RuPaul doesn't listen to Michelle Visage.
No.
So Rue announces to the group that the main challenge for the episode is going to be the Snatch Game, which if you haven't seen RuPaul's Drag Race, they do Snatch Game in every episode. And every season. And it's a match game parody where all of the queens have to do their best celebrity impression. And then there'll be two celebrity contestants And in this case, the contestants are Julie Brown and Downtown Julie Brown of MTV fame. And that's just kind of the type of stunt casting that Drag Race does so well, and you're probably not going to see anywhere else. And it also works out really well because Julie Brown is very clearly enjoying being there. Those are the best type of celebrity judges, the ones who have seen the show and clearly are excited to be there. And then Downtown Julie Brown is just kind of weird and says stuff like, you gave me lots of fun and giggles, which she says that during judging is fantastic. So everyone is getting ready to do to prepare for Snatch Game and going around asking who each other is going to be playing. Roxy Andrews says that she's going to be playing Tamar Braxton, who, if you are not a VH1 reality show person, you have never heard of Tamar Braxton. And yet this is kind of pushed aside. It's like, you're gonna find out who this delightful person is. And I ended up enjoying that. And then Jinx tells everyone that she's going to be playing Little Edie from Grey Gardens. And virtually no one in the room knows who Jinx is talking about. Oh. And I remember watching the episode for the first time and, like, you know, I'm relatively young. I have not seen all of the, you know, canon gay entertainments that I'm supposed to. But even I know Little Edie and I've seen Grey Gardens. And the fact that there are 40-plus-year-old drag queens who have never heard of this person was shocking to me and is kind of the impetus for this episode, for showing how smart Jinx is and how much she's – what a, like, good drag queen she is, just for having this, like, pop culture history.
I'll do you one better. I've never seen Grey Gardens. Even I knew who Lily was.
Yeah. It's part of – it's in
that Rufus Wainwright song, Get the Knack. Yeah.
while everyone's preparing their outfits, Rue comes to do his Tim Gunn walkthrough, which is always great because he gets to kind of, he knows who's probably going to fail and who's going to succeed. It's a little more obvious than when Tim Gunn does it. And he's able to, specifically with characters like Ivy Winters, who's doing Marilyn Monroe, he's trying to explain to her, I know that you can look like Marilyn Monroe, and we will see that proven later, but that's not really what this is about. And he gives that critique a lot to different contestants, including Lanesha Sparks, who we'll hear here.
Lanesha Sparks.
Hello, RuPaul.
Who are you doing?
I'm going to do Michelle Obama.
Michelle Obama?
Yes.
That's an interesting choice. What made you decide to do Michelle Obama?
Because I think I can look like her, and
it's more than just looking like the person. They have to be funny. Can I hear a little bit of your Michelle Obama? What did you serve Obama for breakfast this morning?
French fries.
French fries. Yeah. Michelle Obama, how are your daughters? Who are your other choices?
I was thinking in Celia Cruz.
It's a good choice.
But right now, I get this choice. I think it's better. Celia Cruz, she is the queen of the salsa. But I really know that I can look like Michelle Obama, so I don't go any change.
It's a tough sale, Michelle Obama. Just be funny. Be funny.
I'm Michelle Obama, and I approve this message.
So Lanesha eventually does decide to play Celia Cruz, even though I so wanted to see her do Michelle Obama. That would have been one of the funniest.
Now we do. Yeah, sure.
I really wanted to see that. So then Rue stops by Jinx's table to see how she's doing, and they have a quick little conversation about making sure Rue actually says make sure that Jinx has Little Edie pop for the unwashed masses, which is such a subtle dig at the other queens who Rue knows should have heard of this person and the audience. That's one of the things I love about what Drag Race does so well is it's not just a picture of what drag queens are now, but it's also what Rue thinks that they should be. Rue thinks that you should have this certain pop culture know-how that goes back forever. Like, drag queens traditionally have been the keepers of Hollywood lore and gay camp lore. And the fact that that's not necessarily the case anymore is kind of sad, and Rue knows that and kind of wants to acknowledge that.
Thanks, Google.
So we move on to the actual Snatch Game, which is delightful, and really you should just go online and watch the whole thing. Here's an example of a good answer to a Snatch Game question and a bad answer.
First question for Julie Brown. Lady Bunny is so over politics. When she steps into the voting booth, she just blinks.
Pleasures herself with the voting wand.
Let's hear what our celebrities have to say. Little Edie.
Well, I don't know her personally, but she looks older than Mother Darling. So I said, when she steps into the voting booth, she just seizures. Spelling?
Not a match. Moving on to Celia Cruz, the queen of salsa. Lady Bunny is so over politics. When she steps into the voting booth, she just...
Flip her hair back and floor.
I think it's whip your hair back and forth.
Uh-huh.
Si.
Uh-huh. Si.
Si. No el macho.
No macho.
No.
I'll quickly give a disclaimer that every season, I don't think they did it last season, but they tend to cast one Puerto Rican drag queen because they want to give some they want to just point out that Puerto Rico does have a surprisingly burgeoning drag community. And so they want to kind of give a shout out to that. But what ends up happening is that you get all of these queens who don't speak great English, and that's fine, but it's sometimes difficult to win this show if you can't be humorous in English, or if you can't, like, later on in the show, being very vulnerable and talking a lot about your past is very important. And when you can't quite communicate it properly, it just seems like, well, what are you doing here? We're going to eliminate you at one point.
Got to use those idioms.
Oh, and I should just say that Rue laughing, like, actually, when you can tell that she's having a good time and find something funny, there's nothing better than RuPaul's laugh in the world. It just fills my heart with joy. And then let's hear a clip real quick of, I would say, the second standout of the Snatch Game, which is Alaska Thunderfuck. We can actually say her full name, even though on the show they just say Alaska. Her portrayal of Lady Bunny, who is again, not someone a ton of people know if you're not like into the drag community.
Lady Bunny, same question. When she opens her blank, her personal massager falls out.
Well, Julie, I just wrote anus.
Same neighborhood, not a match.
Seriously, RuPaul's laugh is the best.
The best.
So everyone's kind of going around. As is the case with most Snatch Game episodes, there are more misses than hits. Even though I do not like Roxy Andrews, and she's over the course of the season proves to be kind of a terrible person with her. I'm not going to say she's bullying Jinx because they're all adults, but she's kind of just, her general attitude is kind of shitty. Here she's kind of great. Her Tamar Braxton is really funny. But then you get stuff like Ivy Winters doing Marilyn Monroe, who cannot do the voice and doesn't even know that Marilyn Monroe slept with JFK.
Yeah.
You have Alyssa Edwards, Katy Perry, who is just, there's nothing going on there. She doesn't even, like, Rue asks her if she kissed a girl, and she doesn't even know what to say to that. And the only reason Alyssa Edwards does not end up in the bottom two is because she has immunity. And then you have Detox, who is playing Kesha, who apparently she knows because she was in several of her music videos, peeing in a bottle in front. And the show plays this up as if it's a very offensive thing and they can't believe that this happened. But I mean, compared to some of the performances that are happening on that show, like even when the impressions aren't great and everyone kind of flops on their face, it's just funny to watch people fail. So then after a while, you have Jinx Monsoon, who's been up in the top left position, which anyone who knows Match Game knows that it's a key position to sit in because you get to have banter. You get to have more banter with the host. And that's been the case with Snatch Game, too. Other people who have sat in that seat have been Sharon Needles, who played Michelle Visage. It's just Jinx makes the most of her place there, as we'll hear here.
Rue, may I ask you why you couldn't have gotten any real celebrities for this game?
Well,
I don't have a single idea who any of these people are. You could have gotten Leslie Caroon or Audrey Hepburn or any one of them. Instead, you got Ketchup.
Ketchup?
And that must be Janice Jackson.
Can I ask you a question,
Yes,
Rue?
You can ask me a question.
What's a Little Edie?
Little Edie is a star of a movie, Grey Gardens.
Okay, well, she's not that little.
What the hell is Little Edie? I don't know what that is.
Coco kind of illustrates the key point here, which is not necessarily that you need to come into the show knowing every single gay icon, but if you're presented with something you don't know, maybe ask about it. Or, you know, I don't know if they have phones at that time, but Google it. Like, I didn't know who Leslie Caroo was, but I Googled that. Now I know who someone is.
The other thing is, like, why, if RuPaul clearly knows who Little Edie is, like, why would you call attention to the fact that you don't? Like, clearly, this is a reference that is landing, so why would you be, like, shitty about it when, you know, it works? That's what I don't
know. You're at a Star Wars convention. You don't ask who Lando is.
No, you don't.
Exactly. So later on, back in the workroom, everyone's standing around and talking about the performances and who did well and who did not. And Jay, Jolie, and Alyssa kind of get into – they're fighting again about – because in the last episode, Alyssa named Jinx on the main stage as the worst contestant. And after talking for a while, the conversation kind of turns to contestants who others do not think are putting out quality work, which is – and when the air quotes I'm putting around quality are kind of what Santino Rice is looking for, which is just glamazon dresses every single time that are well-tailored and that they probably didn't make themselves and whatever. So we get Jinx. A lot of this ends up being directed towards Jinx, and we get Jinx trying to explain herself here.
Jade, I can speak up for myself. Alyssa, every week I've done a different look. Like one time I was Space Age, the next time I was Marie Antoinette.
No.
Some people are coming down the runway in complete bullshit.
Had I pulled out on the runway, they would have ripped me to shreds. And y'all know it.
Jinx, she's all comedy and no glamour.
I don't think from day one she's put anything on the runway worth looking at.
I have dealt with this my entire drag career, you know? It's getting frustrating to have to defend a style of drag that's completely valid. When I first got to Seattle, because I'm kind of quirky, not a lot of queens took me very seriously.
Girl, what if I just went out there and not even brushed his hair? I'm gonna say, well, I was trying to make it funny. Everything got to be funny, right?
Every time I step into something new, I have to fight this fight again. I don't want to have to keep explaining myself.
No, poor Jinx. Throughout the season, this theme, again, like I said, it unfolds. Jinx is continuously playing herself. She's doing interesting characters and is being kind of quirky. And the other queens never really get that. And it goes up until the finale when in the final episode, in the live finale, the final three are Jinx and Detox and, like I said before, Roxy Andrews, who later on the season ends up being very mean to Jinx and very condescending. And it takes them leaving the show and having to get audience feedback to realize that maybe being closed-minded assholes is not the way to be on this show. So there's a lot of great stuff in the workroom before they go on the main stage. There's a fight between Coco and Alyssa. I didn't have Dave clip that because the real key to that fight is Coco turning to Alyssa and screaming with her completely orange face and blue eyes like a crazed gay Impala. And you should really look up that picture. It's fantastic. And it's kind of like every other reaction gif on Tumblr. So then on the main stage, everyone, the theme for the fashion show is fishy realness, which is interpreted in many ways. Fishy can be it's a term that means very feminine looking, although some of them actually interpreted as fish, as in Detox, who wears a dress that is just kind of like jellyfish, and Alaska, who's carrying around a mackerel to great comedic effect. And so here's a clip of Jinx's critique from Michelle Visage.
All right, next up, Jinx Monsoon, Michelle Visage.
Jinxy, I am starting to give up here.
It's rather pedestrian.
I'm not getting glamour.
To me, this looks glamorous. I have big blonde hair.
This to me is not big blonde hair.
I do think we have a slightly different aesthetic.
We do?
You ruled the snatch game. I thought it was absolutely brilliant, and I think anybody who ever does the snatch game should watch what you did.
Thank you, Jinx.
Later on, I think that was your last clip, but later when they are judging, Michelle brings it up again. It was like, she thought that was big hair. Like, she's so offended at the idea of, like, the discrepancy between Jinx's wig and what really is big hair.
Yeah. And I actually really like Jinx's outfit in this episode. Like, she's had some misses, but this is kind of, it's got a full idea. It's well executed. It's something you can talk about besides a lot of the other women who sometimes just wear ball gowns because they can look very feminine looking. And Jinx is bringing something more to the show than a lot of other queens are. And either because they're threatened by it or because a lot of them come from the pageant quarter of the drag world, which is something I don't know a ton about. But like the fight that happens earlier in the episode between Alyssa and Coco is because Coco was named Miss Gay 2012 or something, and then she was dethroned because she could not complete her duties, and then the other one had to take it up. And it's just coming from a very – it's strange to watch the show and know that drag queen is a very niche category of people. It's a very – like it's a subgenre, but even within this subgroup of people – you have camps that do not understand each other. And that's another thing about Drag Race that I love, that they're able to kind of like show all these different perspectives and show a subgroup of people that are not one united front.
Just like Bigfoot shows.
Just like Bigfoot. Drag Race is the Bigfoot, uh-huh. Finding Bigfoot of a...
They do often have big feet.
Find shoes for Bigfoot.
So... Detox, who played Kesha to not great effect, and Linacia Sparks end up in the bottom two. Detox, for my money, was not the worst in it. I actually really like Detox. I would have probably put Ivy Winters as Marilyn Monroe in the bottom. But having the three that they do in the middle, Coco, Alyssa, and J.J. Lee, really just sets them up for going for Untucked, which is the behind the scenes half hour like after show that they have, because the three of them have drama together, and so it doesn't really matter. Like, whoever ends up in the bottom two or three, sometimes it's not — Rube always makes sure that the results are what they should be, and who goes home is who should go home. And also, by putting Detox in the bottom two, you really like — The drag performance that they have to do is for a Cher song, and Detox has this very particular way of singing, doing her lip sync, and it's very fun to watch, and works perfectly for Cher. And so they kind of just stuck her there, so it's like, we're going to let you do your thing, we're going to let you show everyone how amazing you are, and then send poor little Linacia Sparks, who didn't have a chance of winning home. Yeah. Jinx is declared the winner, as it should be, because Rue knows how the world works. And you would think that this is kind of going to put a capper on Jinx, on the criticism that Jinx receives. Everyone now sees that Rue values Jinx's quirkiness, but this, again, comes up throughout the season that Jinx is a weirdo and no one quite gets it, and she has to keep letting the criticism roll off, roll like water off a duck's back. I can never exactly remember that. This is just a great episode. Everything, like from the mini challenge to the actual challenge to the runway to all of the drama in between, it works perfectly, and it has like – it works perfectly as an episode in this season and then an episode individual from itself. It just works perfectly, and I love it, and I hope that you submit it to the canon.
Great pick. My thing with reality competition shows is that very rarely do I remember any particular incident in any particular episode after a season's over. It kind of falls out of my head. But when I saw that it was Snatch Game, the season of Jinx Monsoon, I certainly remembered this one for all the reasons that you said. Jinx is incredible as Little Edie, and it's such an underdog story given how shitty the other queens are in their complete, like, smug ignorance, you know, trying to have their own kind of mean girls clique, the same as the season before, but it doesn't quite work, you know.
Ugh, Rulaska Talks.
So nope. Lame. So lame.
And two of them in Rulaska Talks, I actually really, like, Alaska is great.
Yeah.
And Detox is really fun to watch. It's just like Roxy brings them down.
Yeah, I mean, totally. it's the idea of like making an alliance in a show like this. Like, there's really no point. And I just like Jinx so rises above all of it, and it's such a vindication when she wins. Like, of course she does. Yeah, this is an excellent pick, and it highlights a lot of the best and worst of Drag Race in a very economical way. Sarah.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny because Coco's comments, like, even though I think Coco's kind of the worst, the way she would phrase her comments was totally the best. I have used many animated GIFs of Coco pulling various faces because she's hilarious and has a certain great delivery. But, like, she's there to fight with Alyssa and be a glamour queen. And that's like, if she, you know, she's right. Like, sometimes the broken clock is right twice a day. And she's right that she would get red for going down the runway in outfits like Jinx's because she has nothing else to offer. So the way they sort of unwittingly talk about their own like strengths and weaknesses while reading other queens is always really interesting. To me, and I love that this episode is good at sort of highlighting the fact that this show doesn't like hammer on that point too much. I feel like they used to make it more explicit in the early seasons, but I think the show is really good about sort of letting you, you know, draw all these different interconnections between things and not taking itself too seriously in that regard. Tyra Banks. Yeah. This is like the one time I could ever stand Roxy Andrews. So good pick in that regard. Yeah, I didn't actually remember anything about this episode except Little Edie. And since Albert Maisel just died a few days ago.
Sorry, my bad.
Since Albert Maisel's just died a few days ago, it's sort of a good, well-timed imitation to be talking about. But yeah, it was fun to revisit it, and Santino wasn't too annoying, which is like a miracle.
Yeah.
Dave. Apologies for that clip. We're recording a little earlier here in Hawaii HQ because of daylight saving time. Doesn't really affect us, so it ends up being earlier for us. And
so it does affect
us. So I got a sleepy finger, right. But I mean, we're not changing our clocks. Yeah.
That's what she said.
No, that's not what she said.
I love a bedazzled muffin. That's what she said.
So, right. If you've been listening for a while, you know, I'm not big on reality shows. It's my least favorite mega genre on television. There are a few exceptions, you know, for shows that I can tolerate.
Bigfoot?
This is definitely, yeah, Bigfoot being number one, Aliens 2, and Drag Queens 3. I do like this show just because it's genuine, you know, like you can actually, even know some of the challenges. And as you say, you know, it feels like RuPaul has engineered the end despite all the rigmarole with the, you know, lip sync for your life and all that kind of stuff. Like, the show as a whole feels genuine. And I do like that about this show. Only thing I really have to say about the show that nobody else has said is that, or this episode, is that for me, I don't really, having seen, you know, a couple dozen of these episodes, I don't really see what elevates this episode above any other I've seen. And that just might be like a cultural failing of mine. You know, I know everybody loves Snatch Game. I thought Snatch Game was like a 50-50 prospect. I didn't really care for the ones that didn't hit. You know, you're saying that the questions that fail fall on their face were entertaining, not to me so much. So I think like the thing that everybody comes to this episode for didn't really click with me as much. Not to say that this is a bad episode. This is fine. It's entertaining. I liked it. I just didn't really see what elevated it beyond any other episode, which is to say the show knows what it's doing. It's strong. It's got a formula that works, and it sticks to it. So let's put it to a vote. Tara?
To answer your question, I would say what sets this episode apart for me is how Jinx's victory here is like part of her overall arc for the season because she ends up winning.
Right. Okay.
So I vote yay. All
right. And Sarah?
Yeah, I think this is in the is utterly typical lane versus is the best of its kind lane, but it is a very good episode. So I also vote yay.
Okay. Well, I'm a marginal no, but I will not begrudge this a win for sure. So, guys, the following clip is, there we go. All right, everybody. RuPaul's Drag Race Season 5, Episode 5, sometimes referred to as Snatch Game Online. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Gray Canon.
Americans love a winner. Yeah. And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, everybody. It's time for Winner and Loser of the Week. I have a winner from our... this is a little bit old now because of our missed episode. But Winner of the Week is Sex Criminals. And that is a comic, not the people that... that are bad. This is a comic written by Matt Fraction and illustrated by Chip Zdarsky. And you may know the name Matt Fraction from the almost wrapped up Hawkeye comic series, which is really good. I think we've talked about it with Omar on the show. This is a comic that is about a couple of underachievers who discover that time freezes when they orgasm. And they always thought that they alone had this ability, this power, but then they meet each other in their 20s and they decide to rob a bank while everybody's frozen in time after they have sex. So sex criminals. And they're going to use the money to fund her sort of volunteer library that she has in their neighborhood. But then it gets weird. But then after that part, it actually like
then
the story.
It gets weird.
Then it gets weird.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, what makes them a winner on a TV podcast is?
Yes, is that they're... have been picked up, that Sex Criminals have been picked up by Universal TV. We don't know where it's going to end up if it makes it through the pilot and everything like that. Feels like Showtime material to me. Mm. But it's a really entertaining comic. It's tasteful when it needs to be tasteful and not when it needs to be not. It feels quite true to itself. It's a really good story. There is like sci-fi. There's like there's something for everybody in it. You know, there's quirk.
I was actually going to say, let's hope it doesn't end up on sci-fi.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No. No. It's not that type of story. But it's really entertaining.
It's the good gun.
And I am really curious how it's going to translate to the screen. I think the woman calls the world they go into the quick, I think, and then he calls it cum world. So, you know, it's humorous.
I see why you thought Showtime for this.
Yeah, yeah. So
there's also an actual sex shop named Cum World in the comic. I really like Sex Criminals too. I like everything by Matt Fraction. Yes. It's perfect.
Yeah, it's really good. And the art in the comic book is really good too. And it's drawn in this sort of light way that really highlights the material. Like it doesn't look like your typical sort of superhero comic. It's well done. It's more towards the Ghost World sort of style. I forget that guy's name, but
Daniel Klaus.
Yes, thank you. So it's great. All right. Loser of the week. Tara.
This is also a little bit old for the same reason, but loser of the week is Phil Robertson, winner of the Andrew Breitbart Defender of the First Amendment Award at CPAC last weekend.
I was convinced that was a fake award that you made up when I saw
it's the first annual.
It does sound fake. However, it apparently is real. I'm sure it doesn't come with any kind of cash prize, just the glory and then a question mark. But anyway, in case you forgot, Phil Robertson is the... homophobe star of Duck Dynasty, the show that A&E keeps being embarrassed by, yet not canceling at all.
Yeah. Oh, was that it?
Yep.
All right, guys. You know what time it is?
I think.
Snatch game time?
Close. Game time. All right, this is the ninth game time of the season. It's an exciting time to be alive because the standings are valued guests, 4 points.
Woo,
Tara, 3 points.
Whoa.
Sarah, 2 points.
Oh,
so the possibility exists that today we could have a valued guest win.
Alex.
5 points. I'm having a panic attack.
So much is riding on you right now for all the valued guests that came before.
5 points wins the season, as you may remember. All right. So today we are playing First Name Basis from Greg French. In this game, you will guess the name of a TV series from its original or working title. First, I will give you the working title or titles. Sometimes there's more than one. And you're going to guess for 3 points. If you didn't get it, you can guess. If you get it wrong, we're going to jump down to a two-point system in which I give you the year it debuted. If you still get it wrong for 1 point, you got to answer after I give you the genre. So original name, air date, genre.
Got it.
Decreasing points as we go along.
Okay.
That's how we play. We got 30 questions separated by Greg into three increasing levels of difficulty. Okay. We'll have a score break after each level is done.
Okay.
Are we ready to play First Name Basis?
Yes.
All right.
Let's throw it to Picky to see who's going to go first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. So we're going to start with Alex, and then we're going to go to Sarah, and then to Tara. Here we go. It is First Name Basis. Alex, you've got two original titles to work with here. Six of One, Across the Hall. Name that show.
Friends?
That is good for 3 points. All right. Sarah D. Bunting.
Yes.
That Raymond guy and What's with Raymond?
Everybody loves Benson? Just kidding. Everybody loves Raymond.
That is good for 3 points.
So wanted you to say Perry Mason.
Tara?
Yes.
The kids are All Right and Teenage Wasteland.
That 70s show.
All right. Everybody got a 3 point easy one to start off with. Going to get a little trickier now.
Good job, everybody.
Still in our easy round for Alex. What's the question?
I'm going to swing for the fences and say Jeopardy.
That's a 3-pointer. Well done. Sarah.
Yeah.
Lenny, Penny, and Kenny is the original title, working title for this show.
Can I hear it again, please?
Yeah. Lenny with an L, Penny with a P, Kenny with a K. Lenny, Penny, and Kenny. There is no penalty for guessing and guessing wrong. You still get to continue. That
is, well, there is a 1 point penalty, sort of.
Well,
I don't know. Big Bang Theory.
3 points.
What?
Yep.
That's the character's names.
Thanks, Penny.
Tara.
Yes.
NCIS Legend. NCIS Legend.
I'm like second guessing myself so much. NCIS LA? Oh, okay.
That is correct.
All right.
Ooh. Back to Alex. Pop Idol.
Pop Idol.
Yeah.
Well, that was the name of the English, like what American Idol was based on. So I'm just going to say American Idol.
That's good for 3. All right. To Sarah, your working title, Nowhere.
Nowhere. Lost.
3 points.
Oh my god.
No incorrect answers yet.
This is unprecedented.
Feeling
perhaps.
The pressure, Tara?
Kind of.
Your show title.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Cosbys. Mm-mm.
Blackish?
Shit. All right. This show aired 1987.
Is that a different world?
Well, you don't get to answer.
Guess. Still me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought. Okay, sorry.
No stealing.
Is it a different world?
Is that your answer?
Sure.
It's a sitcom.
Okay.
Down to 1 point. Not the Cosbys. Started in 87. This is a sitcom.
Not the Cosbys. 1987. Roseanne?
Married with Children. Married with Children.
Oh.
All right, Alex, now you get to guess.
Sorry, I didn't realize that if we got it wrong.
That's okay. You just ruined the whole episode, but that's cool. The working title is Sex Crimes.
Law and Order SVU.
That's good for three. All right, Sarah.
Yeah.
Two titles. Who's Scared and Mysteries 5. Who's Scared,
Who's
Mysteries 5.
Scared. Scared, Mysteries 5. Twilight Zone, the new class.
1969. This show started in 1969, working title was Who's Scared and Mysteries 5.
Scooby-Doo.
Yeah!
2 points. Yes. Scooby-Doo is correct. Updated. All right, bringing us into our first score break for Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Wozzle World.
Wozzle World?
W-O-O-Z or Z for our American friends. L-E.
Woozle World.
Then. Woozle World. Yeah, I suppose. Woozle World.
Fraggle Rock? Hey!
3 points. Nice. Well done.
All right. Very, very close game. I have 9 points. Sarah has 11 points. Alex has 12 points.
Wow. Did Alex get everyone right?
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
I'm amazing.
He is amazing.
All right. Well done. All right. So now we're into our medium difficulty questions.
Okay.
Medium difficulty.
Okay.
All right. So we're to Alex.
Mm-hmm.
Your show title, originally known as working title, Shopper's Bazaar. Shopper's Bazaar.
Bazaar. Supermarket Sweep.
1975. This show started in 1975. Shopper's Bazaar.
Wheel of Fortune.
2 points.
Like it.
All right, Sarah. The sky's the limit. The sky's the limit.
Sky's the limit. The Price is Right.
3 points.
What? You guys are tied.
All right, Tara.
Yep. Oh.
Cash Mountain.
Cash Mountain. Pyramid, $25,000 pyramid. Shit.
1998. This show started in 1998.
Weakest Link.
Game show. Cash
okay.
Mountain,
right.
98, game show. Weakest Link, I will accept as an answer, but it was incorrect.
Okay, Millionaire. Who wants to be a millionaire?
1 point. All right, back to Alex. Chicks and Dicks.
Sounds terrible.
Chicks and Dicks.
Or does it sound great?
Oh.
I'm going to give you a clue. Not Mad Men. Right?
Well, if I thought they could say Dicks in the title in the 70s, I would say Three's Company.
Uh-huh.
You know what? Three's Company.
2011, recent show.
Oh. Chicks and Dicks. Mm-hmm. And Dicks, right?
Yeah. Chicks and Dicks.
Not Chicks and Dicks.
No. I'm trying to pronunciate. Chicks and Dicks.
Dick.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
It's probably not this either, but Happy Endings?
I like that guess.
It is a sitcom.
Okay. 2011, you said, right?
I did say that.
Was on in 2011.
Oh, we were so young back then. Woo, 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 woo.
Yeah, I was 8 years old.
Yeah. Obama was president.
God, I don't know.
I'm gonna call that one New Girl.
Oh.
All right, number 17.
Spread Eagle.
This is
Spread
for Eagle. Sarah. Wow, three titles, Sarah. Three titles.
Ooh.
The Whole Truth, In the Spotlight, Leave the Bastard.
Hmm.
Once again, three. Yep. In the Spotlight, Leave the Bastard.
Leave the Bastard. What's My Line?
2009 is when this one started.
Okay. No. 2009.
The Whole Truth, In the Spotlight, Leave the Bastard from 2009.
I don't know. This is for Desperate Housewives.
Political drama. It's a drama with politics in it. I'm gonna just say that.
Oh. Well, now it is The Good Wife.
Nice.
Correct for 1 point. All
I'll
right.
Dig it.
Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Life and Stuff.
God.
Life and stuff.
Life and stuff. I'm going to reuse one of Alex's happy endings.
1988.
Oh. Life and stuff, 1988. I'm going to use one of mine, Roseanne. Hey!
2 points.
Hey.
All right. All right. Number 19 for Alex.
Yes.
Please stand by is your
Please
hint.
Stand by.
Working title of what show?
The Daily Show.
Going way back to 1963.
Ugh.
Yeah. Nice.
You were so much younger than 8
yes.
then.
Yeah.
I know. Please stand by. I don't know. I'll take the next hint.
All right. Anthology series. I'm going to say, yeah, that's a good hint. Anthology series.
What was
One might say sci-fi, but that
Anthology.
Might be. Anthology.
Yeah. Stand by 1963.
Twilight Zone.
The other one. It's The Outer Limits. Please stand by with that little TV intro. You know, we're controlling this, we're controlling that.
All right.
All right, Sarah, your working title is Jerks. Jerks. That's a pretty good.
Remember, we've already done Friends, so don't say that.
Yeah, we've already done Big Bang Theory.
Seinfeld.
And we've already done Special Victims Unit. Oh, these jerks. So much raping.
Is it Seinfeld, which was her guess?
2005 Jerks. Shit. Now all I can imagine is Danny Pito for you. 2005 Jerks. Boardwalk Empire.
It is a sitcom. Jerks is like Girls on HBO, except it's
Jerks. Well, yeah, it's not like that.
Yeah, that's right.
That.
Yeah.
It's not Girls. Cougar Town.
It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh yeah. They are jerks.
Big now that you jerks. Know yes. that, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, Tara.
Yep.
45 minutes from Harlem.
Okay.
45 minutes from Harlem, and that's the Harlem in New York, not the one in the Netherlands.
Okay.
1A, Tara. 1A in this Harlem.
Got it.
I'm giving too many hints.
The Bronx Zoo.
What?
That was a show.
Okay.
Asner was in it.
Okay, well, 1978.
Okay.
Still not the Bronx Zoo.
No. 45 minutes from Harlem.
What was the Bronx Zoo?
1978. It was, I think it was a, I mean, there is a Bronx Zoo, but the show, I believe, was about a public high school.
Okay.
All
right. 45 minutes from Harlem, 1978.
Hill Street Blues.
Sitcom.
Barney Miller.
It is. Oh, shit. I don't have the drop. Different Strokes.
Damn it.
How did I not have that drop? God damn it.
You fail.
Damn it. All right.
So score break, right?
Nope, not yet. Everybody's got one more.
Oh, okay.
We're still in the medium difficulty ones.
All right.
All right. Back to Alex. And now this is a little bit different one. It was the working title, but also for a short period, the title of the show. Okay? These Friends of Mine.
Aha.
Oh, that sounds like something.
Yep.
It is.
I can confirm it is.
These Friends of Mine. Is this Cougar Town?
Good guess.
1994.
My So-Called Life.
It is a sitcom. 94, These Friends of Mine, a sitcom. That was the title. And
for a while.
For the first season, I believe.
Yep.
I'm just reusing all of the guesses, but Seinfeld.
Tara, you know it?
Yeah, Ellen.
Yep, it is Ellen, correct.
Wow.
All right. Sarah. New family in town.
Yes.
New family in town.
New family in town. Little House on the Prairie.
1974.
Well, new family in town, 1974.
I'll just say the actual title, Better. I don't even remember them being a new family in town.
All right. There's a hint.
Yeah, there's a hint. But that's not to say you don't. And I mean, I just, y'all know I don't remember, you know, anything.
True.
I am the forgetful judge. 1974, new family in town. For 2 points. What's that show? All right. It's a sitcom. 74 sitcom, new family in town. What's that show? Sarah D. Bundy.
Did we lose them?
I don't know. I think maybe we lost them.
Oh, hello.
Oh, Alex is still there.
Sarah?
Did we lose
I'm still here. Hello?
Oh, okay. Yeah, we hear you now.
I assume it was not Eight is Enough.
We didn't hear you.
Yeah, you broke up, I guess. Sorry about that.
It was not Eight is Enough?
It was not Eight is Enough. That's a good guess. New family in town, 74 sitcom, Happy Days. I don't remember them moving into town or anything, but
wait, but I only got two guesses at that.
Oh, you know what? You broke it up. All right.
Sorry.
All right. No, that's okay.
No, that's...
Let's hold off on the points.
I wouldn't have gotten it for the record.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Let me know if we break up again. All right. So Tara, bring us into our second score break.
Okay.
Ned Fox is my Manny. Ned Fox is my Manny.
Who's the boss?
Ow.
2012. Ned Fox is my Manny.
Oh, God. 2012?
That's what I said.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
Sitcom.
Still don't know.
Ben and Kate.
Oh, Ned. Sigh. All right. I have 12 points. Alex has 14 points. Sarah D. Bunting has 15 points.
All right. So everybody's got two questions left.
Oh, boy.
Yep. And
so it is anyone's game still.
Okay. Back to Alex. These are the hard ones, according to our game author, Greg French. Okay. Rampart. Yes. Not the exciting Jack. Tetris meets castle building game of the 90s.
You talked over his answer, Dave.
I'm sorry.
You're a terrible, terrible host. It's Jag, is what he said.
It is not Jag. It is 2002.
Rampart,
2002. For 2 points, what's that show?
I don't know. Let me get the next hint.
Crime drama.
Okay, well, that narrows it down.
It's a crime drama from 2002, working title Rampart.
Let's say CSI.
The Shield. All right, Sarah. This is all one title. Chasing Zebras, Circling the Drain. Circling the Drain. And let me just say, that makes sense if you know what any part of that means.
King of Queens.
All right, this show started 2004.
Okay.
2004.
Amazing Race.
A medical drama from 2004 called Chasing Zebras, Circling the Drain.
Grey's Anatomy?
It is House. And I looked it up. Zebras are hospital medical terminology for obscure, weird cases.
Huh. Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So we're to Tara.
Yep.
Ready, Willing, and Wired.
Ready, Willing, and Wired. The Wire?
2001. Is it Will and Grace?
Ready, Willing, and Wired. 2001.
Widow?
Is it Scrubs?
2001 teen drama.
Fuck.
Teen drama, 2001.
2001. Oh, God. I don't...
Degrassi, The Next Generation.
Ah! What? Oh.
Well.
The heartbreaker.
What's our scores?
Yeah, all I can play for is a tie now. Scores are still as they were. 12 for me, 14 for Alex, 15 for Sarah.
All right. Okay. Interesting. I can understand at the time. We'll see.
All right.
This might be a game changer, guys.
This is for Alex.
Okay.
Stop.
I just want to remind everybody that the designations of easy, difficult, you know, on all that,
we're Sarah Point.
Mr. Gray.
Get on
French.
With it.
Just go.
Your working title, Tuken.
Probably Tuken.
Tuken.
Tuken?
Tuken. T-O-O-K-E-N. Tuken.
Tuken? I don't know what that is. Okay.
Or possibly...
Magnum P.I.
You're going to say, Tar?
Well, I was going to say it might totally be like a dumb person saying what they think the past tense is of Taken. Tuken.
I was imagining like it was like... You know, someone's last name.
I don't know. It might be. I don't know what it is.
Okay. 2015.
Tuken.
So it's on right now. It just started.
Is this Backstrom?
It's a sitcom.
Tuken. Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt?
Whoa!
Oh.
I thought
ties
everybody knew that.
Ties it up with Sarah D. Bunting.
They actually say that in the show.
Yes, they do. But, she says it.
Yeah. Okay. Oh. So, Sarah, any points here nets you the win. Your show working title, Chopsticks. Chopsticks.
Chopsticks.
Correct. She says, Chopsticks! No! Chopsticks.
Different strokes. Different strokes.
All right. 2015.
Oh, another one that
just
started.
I knew it was this one. Shit.
So why didn't you say it?
Because I don't know the title of it.
Oh.
What it's called.
Uh-oh.
Jesus Christ. Why didn't you see the title of it?
You said you knew what it was. Yes, you didn't know what it was.
She knows what it is. She says what it's
called. The show to which it refers.
I knew what you meant.
Do not know what the actual title is. I know what you are.
Uh-huh. Does it help if I say I wrote the new show fact sheet on it?
Don't do that. There's a game on the line here.
I still don't remember the name of it.
All right, last clue. It's a sitcom.
It's racist, so.
You got one more guess.
Yeah, thanks.
One more guess.
Vincent.
Fresh off the boat.
Ah.
Fresh off the boat. Now look, in my defense, you said you knew it was this one.
Listen. She does. She knows what it is. She didn't know what it's called. Stop being a dick.
I'm not being a dick. I'm defending myself.
Oh my God. Just give us the last one. We need to find out if we're going to be in a three-way tie, which we're not.
No, we're not. Tara.
Yeah.
The Greenhorn.
The Greenhorn.
Yep.
Northern Exposure.
1986. Sitcom.
Okay.
If this is what I think it is, I'm going to be so mad.
Silver Spoons?
What do you think it is, Sarah?
Perfect Strangers.
It is.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit!
It was.
All right, well, I'm out. Tied up. I hope there's a tiebreaker.
There is a tiebreaker. Okay.
Good luck, everybody.
So here's how it works. When I start reading, you can answer anytime. But once you answer, you have to give your opponent a chance to answer before you get to answer again. Right?
If you are wrong.
If you're wrong.
Okay.
Right? Okay. So I'm going to start just slowly reading all the clues. Little exciting pauses between them all. And then whoever gets it first with alternating answers wins. Here we go. Working title is It's Messy. It's Messy.
Okay.
Any guesses for It's Messy?
It's Messy.
The show started.
I got nothing.
What was that?
I got nothing.
The show started 2012. It's Messy. 2012.
Scandal.
I like that guess.
Alex.
Revenge.
I like that one too.
Sitcom. 2012. It's Messy. Sitcom.
Is this Happy Endings?
All right, Sarah, you got a free guess. It's Messy, 2012 sitcom, and then I'm going to have to start creating clues.
Girls.
All right. Tara's going to come over and read the answer and give you a clue.
Okay. It's set in New York.
Two Broke Girls.
No, no. Sarah's got
Sarah's gets a guess.
Right.
Mindy Project.
Yeah!
Oh,
that is correct.
Sarah.
All right, down to the wire.
That was exciting.
Once she was brought down by some jerk host, now she rises triumphant.
Just like Mindy herself.
Just like Mindy herself. Well, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We played the hand House of Cards Season 3 gave us. Sarah explained why she is not a crackpot for wanting a moratorium on kids storming away from the dinner table on TV. And Liv gave us this week's creepy face-off report. We went around the dial with stops at Togetherness, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, In Search Of, and we also explored Flow Lore and CSI Cyber before Alex successfully pitched us RuPaul Drag Race's Snatch Game for the canon. Remember, guys, that
we're listening.
I am David Tickle, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
I'm all murdered out.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Hey, Meacham, pull my finger.
And Alex Zidell, who I've never actually asked how he pronounced his last name.
He said it at the beginning. It's Zidell.
Well, it
That's
is.
Also okay, because I didn't have anything prepared. Oh, I forgot.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Tonight, I give you the truth. And the truth is this. The American dream has failed you. Work hard, play by the rules. You aren't guaranteed success. Your children will not have a better life than you did.
Troll the respawn, Jeremy.